Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody's got the fever. This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago. Never know how much I love you. You never know how much I care. When you put your arms around me, I get a feeling that's too hard to bear. You give me fever.
Good evening and welcome to Lenny Godfrey Freight Chaser. The pandemic has given us a lot of different challenges. In some places, fire, in some places, floods, in some places. So we really do concentrate and send all the best prayers and vibes. The challenge this summer, and for those of us who have been enjoying our normal summer, I welcome you to listening, and thank you all for listening again here on this October 30th, 2022. We are blessed to be on the air in Lenny Godfrey Straight No Chaser. So now I'm going to do a little bit of my housekeeping. As I normally do, I see the board is beginning to fill up, and those people, there are some numbers I recognize, some I don't. So those of you who I don't recognize your numbers, let me tell you what this is about. We are on / S is in Sam, F is in Fred, T is in Tom, H is in Harry, and the number 2. That means that you can go to that address and listen to more than 65 or 70 episodes that I have done over the last year and a half. And all of them have been dedicated to the fact that we are wanting to sustain the arts in our society and to claim how important it is for us to really honor the arts and not forget, let it be the last thing that we think about, but let it be the first thing that we think about and fund it and support it. So those things, and I've had some wonderful guests to talk about how the arts has influenced their lives. And this evening is not any different because I have a fabulous guest that's coming up. But before I get to my guest, let me also tell you and ask a question or say hello. It is 516-453-6063. All you have to do is call in. You can listen from that, or if you want to say something, you press the number 1. I will see it. That little hand comes up, and I will let you on the air, and you can ask questions of my wonderful guest. And so now to get to my guest. This evening, I have such the pleasure of talking to one of my favorite friends that I've known since, I believe, we haven't determined if I'm exactly right, but since 2006, when we did a production at Arena Stage of Gem of the Ocean, and he was quite brilliant in it. Fresh Prince would be the two most wonderful gentlemen to work with, because each of them would make sure every evening, whether it was an ice storm, a snowstorm, or something, that I got to where I needed to go, which was the residence was just a little far away, to make sure I was there every evening safely. My husband really appreciated that. Really wonderful, wonderful men who did that, along with being on the stage with them. It was my pleasure. And so to talk about my guest, I am going to talk about my friend, the actor, the activist, the writer, the producer. He is so involved in the arts all the way around 360 degrees, and you will recognize his name, and later when we get on some of the things that you've seen him in are Homicide, Life on the Street. He was Colonel George, and let me get this right, and he'll probably tell me if I don't get it right. He'll re-pronounce it for me, but it looks like it's Bonfather. Homicide, the movie, and he was Wendell Orlando Blocker in The Wire. He was Vivian Thomas in Something the Lord Made. He has done several Law and Orders. He has done so many productions of theater, we can't even recall. And so I'm going to start the conversation now with my friend, Clayton LaBeouf. Hello, Clayton. How are you? Say hello to our audience, if you could, please. Oh, you know what? I have to put him, wait a minute. Now, Clayton, I think it muted you for a second.
Yes,
now,
can you?
It did. Yes, I can hear you now. Go right on ahead. Say hello to the audience. If you
okay. That's, okay, wonderful intro. I appreciate it. I'm glad to be with you here this Wednesday afternoon. It's a special day as well, and I want to thank all your listeners and people who have been following, you know, what you're doing. And shining the light on some of us, you know, that have something to offer.
Always. It's my theater, television, film. But we talk about the world. And that was what was fascinating
yes.
about our relationship that turned into a friendship, that we could really talk about so many other things, the well-roundedness of who we were and how the arts affected us in so many ways. So I want to start, though. We know where you are now, and I want to build that arc as to how you got there, talking about the people in your life. I love the way you talk about the women in your life and get to that. But I also want to start at the very beginning, so because you are a New York-born
okay.
person. So tell us about that and tell us how that journey got you to out of New York for a while, into where you were, back and forth.
Yes, I was born in Yonkers, New York, which is, you know, right up the way. Yonkers, New York, a very unique place, in a housing project called the Schlobaum Housing Project, which is kind of infamous in its own way. Those who Mary J. Blige comes out of those housing projects. Down the street was the School Street projects where DMX, I went to school with DMX's father, who was quite talented. Ella Fitzgerald is from Yonkers, New York. There's a number of people, you know, because it's right up 20 minutes away from the city, 25 minutes, but a lot of people think it's way upstate.
Yes.
A lot of New York folks say, oh, it's upstate. It's actually, you know, 25 minutes up the Hudson River. So I grew up, you know, and it took me to high school to where I was into sports very, very deeply. And that's where my focus was until I got to high school and I was in a production, a couple of productions. And that's what turned me totally around. I wasn't the caliber of sports guy.
Yes. Do you remember what it was what it was about those productions? Because I like you, I was looking at another advocation. I was looking at education before I got into. I would always be in music,
yes.
but you know, but the acting part of it didn't come to me until I was a freshman in college. So do you remember what it was about? How you got to that theatrical introduction? Was it because you said you weren't a sports person? So was that offered as a class and you opted to take it?
No, what happened was actually, I think it's a combination of things for me. People are fascinating. They always will be fascinating. Their stories within themselves. So I was around so many unique people that my focus for career, you know how people say you get focused on a career. So that was sports. I said, okay, I'm going to try to be a baseball player. But then when I realized I was not the caliber of a pro athlete, you know, realization set in, you know, the reality that you're not going to make that. And I got into a play. Story always fascinated me. It's story. Everybody has their own story. And I was around not actors, not people who were in the profession, but everyday people, my family, mm-hmm. friends, people around. I found them so fascinating. So when I got into this production, it was called, what was the name of it? I forget right now. The Sophisticated Touch. It was a musical. Everybody mm-hmm. in the high school was in it. You know how high school shows are, cast yeah. of thousands. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of fun. But then it was the next production that did it, and that was Imamu Baraka's The Dutchman.
Mm.
And mm-hmm. that turned everything around. Because that's a heavy piece. It still is very heavy.
It is.
And we had to get special permission from the Board of Education to do it because it's very controversial. And they mm-hmm. said a high school, the Yonkers Board of Education, was saying it was a little too heavy for this high school. But the teacher, John Federico, I'll never forget him. He was bad. And he fought and said, what if we have an after show discussion? And that's when the board and the people said, okay, well, if you talk about this controversial play, then we'll allow you to do it. And that was the play that really turned me into this, you know, wow, this is real deep.
So after you did
because
that,
it was a very serious play.
Well, yes, it is. I mean, I would suggest that people don't know exactly what you're talking about, that they go out and go to the library or go online and read it. Because it's
yes.
available.
I think
you know?
There's even they made a film with what's the man's the gentleman that passed away. He was teaching at Howard University. His name will come to me.
He was in Malcolm X. He did
a soap opera work as well.
I know who you're talking about. I'll get his name.
Yes.
I'll get his name.
You know
yes.
what?
Yes. Yes.
Sure.
You know what's interesting is when we go through so many parts of history, we see how many people were involved in those kinds of things, you know, that there are so many actors that really went through so many different wonderful pieces. But I remember he was in James Baldwin's Blues for Mr. Charlie.
Al Freeman Jr.
Yes.
It was Al Freeman Jr. Yes.
Yes. Yes.
That's online, I believe. They might have taken
yes,
it off, but they shot a film version of it. Yes.
Yes. yes
so
yes.
that's really what did it, because after we did that production and mm-hmm. the after-show discussion, some of the audience members were so into the piece, I realized this is a way to bring communication of certain issues, different ideas, different people's opinions, and we can discuss it in a certain way, you know, after seeing some type of story first, rather than our own opinions flying around, which everyone they say is entitled to, but you see a story first, and then your opinions are in context of the story
exactly.
that you saw. So it offered something that I had, it offered something that I hadn't seen up until that time, people discussing serious things after a story that was not television. By the way, that was live.
So how did that go in your family, in your home with your parents and siblings? Did they all agree with your?
That's a very good question.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
That's a very good question, Lenny. Because what happened was what I was most proud about. It was a way to bring my mother and father together when they were going through some difficult times.
Mm.
Both the first production, the musical. Yeah, they were, you know, people who are married with children have difficulties. And, you know, it would bring my mother and father together at times where they were not doing well with one another, but they would come to see me in the play. So I also felt the importance. Theater made me realize, okay, see, they're coming out to watch you do what you do, and it made me feel good to bring them together. As far as me pursuing it, no problem at all. No problem at all, because I was doing it. See, it wasn't as if I was talking about doing it. I was doing it.
So
you know, you can talk about being an actor, and
well, many people talk about being actors, and you we know that. You know the difference between somebody telling you that they're an actor, and then you go in and watching somebody who's just who does it for a living. So you actually started very young,
yes,
knowing that that was something that you wanted to do. So what steps did you take to make it your advocation, Clayton?
What I did was a couple of friends that saw me in it, one lady in particular. There's always, you know, particular people that come into your life, and her name was Lynn Waller. She was a year ahead of me in high school, and she had gotten a scholarship to Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh. She wasn't an actor. She had just, there was a program there. She came home on a break, and she was a good friend of my sister, Janae. And she started telling me, Clayton, you know, you're doing acting here in school. Carnegie Mellon has a drama program that's supposed to be really, really good. And so I looked into it and was reading about it, and they had a program called the CMAP, M-A-P. I have to research. I'm just finding out that some people say it was started by Orcus Wilson, Lenny.
Really?
The CMAP program.
Okay.
That's what I'm hearing now. I have to, because, and I'm just hearing that, you know, over the couple of years, but what it was scholarship, full year of scholarship to go to that very prestigious university. I had to audition, but I got in.
Mm-hmm.
And it was because of a friend, you see? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, because to tell you the truth, I didn't really know how to pursue it, you know what I'm saying? But when she was at my sister's, in my sister's room, she called me in and she said, you have to check this school out that I'm at. She was majoring in something else. I can't recall. She was not an actor. But she said, you have to check out their theater department. And when I did, I said, a scholarship. You had to fill out the form or whatever. Thanks to the brothers and sisters prior to us. You know how the 60s were. There were people who, the activists who, you know, who got busy in order for the CMAP program to even exist. The beautiful brothers and sisters, you know, that spoke out, you know, talked about, you know, bringing some sort of balance to the educational. And I auditioned. And do you know who was there? Guess who was there? A guy that you might know. He was the only black instructor there at my audition and at the school. His name was Israel Hicks.
Oh, yes. Israel Hicks.
I don't know if you know
Israel
Hicks. Yes.
I don't know. I didn't know Israel Hicks personally, but I do know of Israel Hicks. Yes. So
yeah, there's a lot of people. Israel was there.
So therefore,
so I got in.
You got in. So how did that utilize? How did that fit into your life as to move you forward into this business of the arts? How did that move you forward?
What I found out at the school was how serious they took theater arts. You see, I didn't graduate, but what I'm saying is, you know, it was a bit of a culture shock because that's a prestigious university, a lot of money to go there even to today.
Mm-hmm.
And they had people, you know, other people, rich young folk up there that acted a certain way and had certain privileges that I had never seen before. I saw some strange things up there, like white young men getting arrested for drugs and out the next day with a bathroom full of drugs, but they're let out doing certain things that were wild and crazy, that if somebody else does it with of a different shade, you're not going to get the same kind of treatment. mm-hmm. you know, destroying dormitories, doing different things. And it's just like, oh, well, they just having fun and the blase, blase. So that was a bit of a culture shock for me being in an environment like that. But mm-hmm. on the dramatic side, they were serious. Yeah, we had serious classes. They took it so serious that I learned about off-Broadway. I learned that this was something that you could really consider outside of television and movies. That's what was interesting for me. I knew TV because I'd watch television.
Exactly.
I'd go to the movies, but they were into theater. Yeah, they was into, like, this is the world of theater. Broadway, Equity, mm-hmm. these kinds of things, off-Broadway, off-Broadway, mm-hmm. and even the regional. That's when I started learning about regional theaters.
Theaters, and it was a very prestigious, not monetary, not a lot of monetary gain, but when one got involved in it, a lot of people thought, oh, you're an artist, because then it wasn't as commercial as it is today. You became involved in the theater at that point because you really wanted to do theater. It wasn't a stepping stone.
But then I learned that the film industry, mm-hmm. what I learned is that the film industry was built on a lot of plays that I did. You know, I didn't know that a lot of plays were adapted and made into movies. I said, okay, this is the root. Okay, now the stories again. Not so much the actors at that time, even though I knew some actors, you know, that I would see every now and then. But I'm like, okay, the root of the movie industry, because I was a movie buff. I could walk to three movies in my neighborhood. I could literally walk to three different movie theaters. Mm-hmm. I stayed in the movie theaters. I saw some very interesting movies. But going to the school, I learned that road. You know, okay, you can go and do an off. I found out that Ben-Hur was a play. I said, what, now you tell me Ben-Hur, the movie with the chariot races and all that, that was a play at one time?
And
you start learning, okay, this is where.
There were two movies before the one that all of us saw when we were younger. There were two movies before that. One silent, both of them silent.
Even before that?
Mm-hmm.
That's what you learn. You know,
Rod,
one of the cats that I really am deep into, he came to the school to speak, and I've been deep into this guy's name is Rod Serling. We all know him from the Twilight Zone, but that man was into a whole lot more that a lot of people are not aware of. And he came to the school to speak, and he was dropping some jewels. I saw Rod Serling speak about his desire. His desire was to be a playwright.
Hmm.
And he wrote a play about Emmett Till, Lenny. He got a play about Emmett Till.
Hmm.
Yeah, that never was produced.
Yeah.
So I'll talk to you about, that's what I'm saying. So when you have that kind of experience, you have somebody like him come to the school to speak. Then you had the guy running the program was a man named Earl Gister, who has a lot of respect in the theater. I said that Israel was there. Israel was this tall black man, drove a sports car, but he was very serious. He actually told me some things, you know. He said, if you want to act, Clay, you can't be, you can't be too thoughtful with it. You got to trust people sometimes. I'm coming from, you know, a low-income area. My guard is up on certain things, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And he was like saying, you know, hey, you know, sometimes, you know, you have to call a stretch, you know, don't overthink things, you know, go ahead and express if you feel. So I played a blind guy one time in class, and that really shook up a lot of people because I really did it so well that was a breakthrough for me,
mm-hmm.
you know, of playing characters, you know,
mm-hmm.
getting into
mm-hmm.
character work, as they call it. Like, you can be an actor. So what is character? So, well, what does it feel like if you didn't have, if you could not see? You know, and that was a breakthrough for me because I played a blind guy so well that it actually became the talk of, you know, the freshman class. You know, people thought, man, he tore into that. And I had never, you know, tried, you know, to do something like that before, you know.
So
make
when,
it convincing.
You
know, how do you convince people?
Yeah, to be so genuine so that people really
yes.
thought that you
that
were
you're
that.
Not really even acting. That you're not actually acting.
No.
That's the
no,
strange thing,
big.
Right? They say, good idea. You don't act. I said, well, what do you
it's
mean by that?
You see, yes.
I'm here to act. He said, well, don't act.
Well, don't.
That's the tricky
well,
now, part, right?
Once you left Carnegie Mellon, what did you want to do? What did you want to do taking those experiences that you had and now you decided to leave Carnegie Mellon? What was the next step? Was it to go back to New York? Was it to go to what did you do? What did you do?
Yeah, I went back home. I only did 2 years there because, you had to audition a second time to take the second year. That was the Carnegie Mellon's drama department. Just because you got in on the first year didn't mean that you were guaranteed to come back to the school.
Exactly.
You had to audition again and be accepted in the second year, which I was. And then I did another year, but I told the drama head that they didn't have a film department. And but it was really me wanting to leave too. It was a lack of money, some things going on with my family that I felt distant from. Times were changing in my hometown. You know, different things start happening that we're in the midst of the 60s again. And,
yes.
you know, assassinations, drugs, different things. Your family's in a low-income area that's changing different. I felt distant. So I went back home, and my family, my mother asked me, what's next for you? And I said, I think I might go to California. My father told me that he had a brother. Now, that's when the story gets interesting. My father began to talk about his brother that had a radio and TV show in Washington, D.C. His name was Petey Green.
Mm-hmm.
But him and my father were, lack of a better word, separate. They did not really communicate with each other. But my father said, well, why don't you go down there and see can assist you in any way. And he was quite a controversial guy. I can talk about him at some, you know, maybe later on as we go on. But Petey Green, if anybody wants to Google what Washington was about, this man, Don Cheadle played him in the movie. I can just go there. They made a feature film about my father's brother, my uncle, Petey Green.
Mm-hmm.
A recent with Taraji Henson was in it. Don Cheadle played him. And, when they make a feature film about you, you know, he did some very unique, interesting. Howard Stern said that that's who he studied, if that means it don't mean anything to me because I'm not no Howard Stern kind of person. But he said, I studied this man.
Yes.
I'm just saying, you know, the kind of impact that he had. And there's a Marion Barry. He would get into it with the mayor. He was quite a character. I believe, and I'm going to work at this, I'm getting off me for a minute, but I'm sure answering your question as to what happened. Instead of me going to California, I did come down to live with my uncle. His wife and children left him because he had some problems with alcohol, even though he was on television with his own TV show, which was quite unique, his television show. He had some personal, you know, problems with alcohol and things, and he was a hard man. He was a hard man to deal with. And so I stayed with him for a while. But then I left and I became a disc jockey. I became a disc jockey in the city of Washington, D.C. I played the top clubs. It was so heavy here, Lenny, in D.C. I worked every day but Monday, just like theater.
Wow.
From Tuesday night to Sunday, they were partying in this city because the transition came from live bands into what's better known as disco using records. Now, New York has always had clubs where you use records to party to, but D.C. was at that time in the early 70s more of a live band kind of town.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the disco came in, the bands got, you know, pushed to the side, and then these clubs started springing up. And I was a big part of that movement because I was mixing music like they had never heard before. I was taking two turntables and the mixing board. And when people got on the dance floor with me, they couldn't get off.
How did you go from DJ? And how long did you do that, Clayton?
I did that for a while because my goal as a youngster was to make money. Okay, acting is an interest. Certain things are an interest, but the goal is money. So the interest is one thing, and I said I didn't act, Lenny. I didn't act for 10 years. I let it go. Yeah. I'm like this. I'm making money. So I did a little radio, and I thought then, I said, okay, I did some retail. So I thought my career or my work would go into music, you know, radio, obviously, you know, getting into radio, spinning records, more moving into radio. I did some AM radio on WEAM, was an AM station, and that's where it was pretty much, I think, headed for me until something interesting happened with that theater bug again. The radio station thing, they shut down or something. And I started thinking again about, you know, theater, acting. And I got into a program in New York, back to New York. And this is something that I want to talk with you more about. It's a very special program. And it was called the Community Film Workshop Council, where they were teaching us how to operate film cameras, edit film, and do journalism. And Sidney Poitier was the one who helped founded it.
Mm-hmm.
This is the kind of stories that are out here. The Community Film Workshop Council, and its goal was to train journalists to get more Black journalists on the air. You know who came to speak to us? Gil Noble came to speak to us at that program. Mm-hmm. Various people. The guy's name was Richard. The guy that headed it up. A lady named Jean Oliver. Any New Yorker that's been around for a while, you mentioned Jean Oliver. She was the one that helped guide me into the program. I made a phone call, and she said, young man, you're calling. You don't have much time to get into this program. You got to do this, do that. But she walked me through it, and it's rare that you get someone on the phone that is patient, you know? But she was patient because she could have just easily said, well, you know, brother, look, you know, you and it's going to take you a minute. But she walked me through it. I followed up. When I met her, I fell in love with her because she walked me through. I got in the program, but you know what happened. While I'm in New York studying journalism at the Community Film Workshop Council, the theater bug hits you. You're back in New York.
Well, it's hard to be in New York and be in parts of the arts. It's very hard to be in New York and be in any parts of the arts and not get involved a little bit, get distracted by live performance in theater because it was so attractive then. It was so vibrant and genuine.
Well, see, I was confused. Yes. Matter of fact, I have worked against it. See, again, life is funny. Even though the bug was there, I was still stuck on, but you got to make some money. Do the journalism thing. And it shows you how funny life is. Do you know I actually left New York, went back to D.C., and then make up my mind? That's when people laugh. You doing it backwards, bro. I got to D.C. and then said, let me get back into acting. I said, why you didn't do that in New York when you were there? I said, hey, I can't even answer that. It's like, it's just strange how different things affect you at different times.
At different times. Now, I want you to be careful because if you're moving at all, sometimes your signal goes out a little bit. So make sure whatever you're talking to, keep it steady. You know, now, Clayton, one of the things that you've written about music, that's one of the things. You've got plays that have a lot of music in it. So that influence has happened through you in a different discipline as a writer. You've achieved that. What do you think, once you got into the business as between when you started in it then, and what do you think about it now?
Okay, you broke up just a little bit. So you're asking me that what's the difference between the music as it relates to theater?
No, I'm asking you, once you got into theater, remember that your entree into theater and all of the things that attracted it to you, that attracted theater for you. What were you thinking then, and has that changed? What do you think about theater now? Are those things still attractive?
Oh,
has it
I got you.
For you?
Yeah, because when I got into it again, you start studying certain actors, the Ivan Dixons, the Ruby Dees, you know what I mean? The Ossie Davises, the Vernon Washingtons. All of a sudden, you know, the Woody King Jr., what he's doing down there with the different people. People that work, Melvin Van Peebles was a big inspiration to me because I knew that once he had made his film Sweetback that he actually went and produced three, I'm like, okay, this guy is interesting.
Yes.
He takes... he takes money that he makes from films, and then I'm checking out. Yeah, I'm checking people out like that, So I'm like saying, okay. Then music was such a big part of me growing up with my family. I had uncles. My mother had, brothers, and they would come by with the James Brown albums, the Jimi Hendrix, a wide group. My sister was into Carole King. And just different, it was so many that I didn't separate, Lenny, to answer your question. I don't separate theater from anything. When someone asks me who my favorite actors are, here's my answers. Miles Davis, Michael Jackson, and I start mentioning people like that as actors. That's just where I'm at because they're performing artists. So I have a little different take on the dip, like you say, what's different now? What I want to be different, I'm actually working toward this to see if people see what my point is. Because I think I have a point. If someone works on stage, Billie Holiday to me is a great actress. I don't just see her as a singer. Plus she was on film. I say a performing artist, Earth, Wind, and Fire, to me, is some of the greatest theater I've ever seen. Parliament Funkadelic is some of the greatest theater. Sun Ra is some of the greatest theater I have ever seen. So I don't separate the way a lot of people do. Okay, well, we have the spoken word artists in the with the poets over here. We have the dancers at the dance thing, and the actors are, I'm like, it's theater arts, y'all. And I believe, to answer your question, if I can do work that shows that, and I have done one in particular, the one you talk, RS-24 is a play that I've written that incorporates, right, the music, but it's not necessarily a musical. There's references to different stories. There are lines. There are things that, like, different people will come in and say, yes, Billie Holiday is a great actor. Someone said, Billie Holiday's not an actor. Oh, you didn't see Bessie Smith in a movie, one of the early short films that was made, Bessie Smith, if we want to go past Billie. Ella Fitzgerald is in the movies with Abbott and Costello.
Yeah.
So does that make her just a singer? If she's performing in a film, her debut performance, A Tisket, A Tasket, is in a movie with Abbott and Costello, two little crazy guys running around. And we got our queen. So when I look at that kind of thing, I'm hoping as we move forward in the future, the work that I do is to break, to see people to get that side. So then the stories, I believe, will grow because then we'll start bringing the stories of, okay, well, who was Jimi Hendrix's mother? Okay, who is Maurice White from Earth, Wind, and Fire's father?
Now we're going to start talking about stories. Yeah, what you're saying is that you want to break those barriers down, those categories down, and begin to make people understand that the art has no barriers, that people, It's a very fluid.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, it's a very fluid kind of art. Now
that's
I'm saying
that's a nice way to put it because I do the long-winded explanation.
Well, you know, Clayton. Now you know our conversations are always very interesting. One of the things that I want you to talk about too, because I mean I stay quiet because I really want people to understand your thinking, your kind of thinking, and the avenues that you use. I mean, you have a workshop touch on, but one of the things I want to ask you is with all of these things that you have gathered over the years, how you formulated how you regard the arts, what footprint is it that you want to leave when we think about you?
Yes, I would say story first.
Okay.
Story is what everything revolves around, but sometimes if we lose sight of that, we get into box office or we get into miscasting even. There's an actor that is so strong, like, say, in the role of a Betsy Smith, just say for an example. And if we're not working in a certain way, then certain people who want to make money and do a Betsy Smith kind of story, they'll cast somebody in it that may have the clout in terms of numbers for the box office, mm-hmm. but we have so many others that could really dive into the depth and mm-hmm. certain ways of the character. You see mm-hmm. what I mean? And then that
yeah.
becomes an issue, particularly with black audiences, because they're like, why did they cast her or him? And I said, they're looking for box office. And they might get the box office, but somehow the people come away, and it looks like a lot of times the people are not satisfied with certain, you know, with certain ways the stories of our ancestors in particular are handled. And it's going to continue. Take, for example, the great Chadwick Boseman was casted as, what was the judge's name?
Marshall.
What was the judge's name? Yes.
Thurgood
now,
Marshall.
We all know that Lawrence Thurgood Marshall. Yes. Now, that's a great actor, Chadwick Boseman. We're not getting it, but the point I'm saying, as you see, he was strong in the box office. So someone said, hey, let's continue with the strength. Good for him. He take the role. We're not discussing that. I don't want to be misunderstood. That's what happens. But I just know that there's a brother named Lawrence Fishburne that did him on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wondered, you know, I wondered if they ever considered, I don't know. It was just a thought. I just said, because when I heard he was doing Thurgood Marshall, my first thought was, that's like kind of interesting. Good for the brother. I said, but didn't Lawrence Fishburne do him? I thought, I wonder if Lawrence was, if I met Lawrence, it'd be one of the questions that I asked him. Was there any discussion?
Yeah
I would just, you know, I say, was there any discussion? He might say, why? Why you want to know, brother?
You know, what you said was story first. What you said was you want an industry in which the content is more important than all the commerciality of it, because because celluloid stays forever. And at one point in time, what I believe
yes.
you're saying is that the studios, they cast for the moment who is hot at the moment. Sometimes they're appropriate,
yes.
sometimes they're not. And if by chance it's not as appropriate, that film stays forever. And sometimes it doesn't do the
That's what I'm talking about. And then, and I'm not against, again, I understand.
So
see, or overstand
the story, ultimately considers the story first and not the commercial.
See, that's where, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had to
ask myself a question. What I did to help myself out first for overstanding, I said to myself, you have to stop going to the pizza shop trying to buy a couch. What does that mean? I said, if that's the industry, that's the way they work, I'm not mad at them because that's what they're set up to do. I don't want to be misunderstood. The question was, what do you want to leave? I'm saying, well, if I can leave some of the work to bring balance, balance mm-hmm. has become my very favorite word. If someone to ask me, what is your favorite food? What is your favorite word? Balance is, because that you can see different sides. If a production company puts up millions, I can understand why they want box up. I mentioned a film on my family. I just told you about my uncle. I didn't play him. Mm-hmm. I didn't play, but people can see me playing if they go to YouTube. They didn't ask me to play my own uncle. And I understand why. There are other actors. When you put millions of dollars up for a production and you want a return on millions, you might not want to take a chance on somebody that doesn't have the kinds of numbers that somebody else has. It's that simple. I want to be clear on both sides of the issue, see. I'm not railing. I don't rail against.
Yes. But you understand the reason, their reasoning.
Yeah, I'm not railing against any commercial industry.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, I don't rail against it because that's what it is. It's just like anything. Don't go to the pizza shop, try to buy a sofa. we sell pizza here, my man, so don't come in here telling us what you want. This is what we do, you know. But,
right.
So that's now, to answer your question.
Well, thank you. Now, we're down to almost the last about 10 minutes of this program. See how fast it goes? And I knew you're telling
yes,
the
it does.
Story. Of your evolution would go very quickly. But I think the people who, when I did post and say that you were coming, there were so many people who responded and remembered you from your work. And I wanted them to know not just your work, because they can go and view that now, you know, anywhere, YouTube, reruns, all of that.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted them to know how the work evolved in you. And that's, this journey has been that. Now, I have another question. We may not get
okay.
You've done many movie junkets. You've done, you know, a lot of people don't know the word junket, but it, when you are involved in the film and television industry, it is a way that actors are exposed to the press, and you go from one room to another room, and the press asks you questions about the film that or the television show that you've done. And, you know, and you try to respond and they try to create a persona for you. If this was a junket
okay.
and I'm interviewing you about your life, what question would you like me to ask you so that you'd be able to tell me something about yourself that you hadn't been asked?
Wow. Okay. I usually say again, deep life experiences would be the question. Like, you know, we all have different life experiences. Certain mm-hmm. things might happen to us when we were younger.
Say that one more time.
Or,
Clayton, say that
know.
One more time. You cut out. Say it one more time. You were cut out. You cut out.
Say oh, okay. I would say certain life experiences that stood out that were very impactful. You know, what life, like it could, you know, sometimes you're close to an accident, you know what I mean? And you
mm-hmm.
escape, or sometimes you're even arrested. I've been mm-hmm. arrested. One thing that I have not talked about, because I don't do a lot of press, Lenny, because I see some of the games that journalists play. I did this with you because watching you in our production quietly, I got to know you after our show, if you recall, because we were busy
yeah.
in rehearsal.
Yeah.
And I watched your work process. Then later we got to know each other with these kinds of conversations, and that's what's led up to this. But I say all that to say I've not opened myself up to the press because there's a lot of game within the journalism world, and they look for the negative. But that's why I said I would come on because I don't do a lot of press. But anyway, it's life experience. Take, for example, I was in church one time at a friend's homegoing service. And Lenny, this is the truth. It rained inside the church and the rain hit me only. through the roof. Water came down off the roof in the church, and it fell on me in the church during the funeral. And the water did not fall on anybody else. It stopped the funeral. And I didn't say this part. The strange thing about it was it happened when the minister was parading around joking about the Washington football team. It went into a crazy kind of situation where the deceased, the young fellow who was a friend of mine, he's in the casket, open casket, and he was a Cowboy fan. He lived in Washington. So the minister, I think the pastor was trying to make light, as you know, sometimes you're not supposed to have a dry service all the time. But he went into, I believe he went overboard because I was getting ready to walk out. He went into this rant about I'm a Redskin fan and went into a, just went into a situation I wasn't, I'm a little different. I'm like, okay, it was light at first, but you know, now you're going into, and he went so far as to even put a jersey on. This is during the service. See, this is why I'm saying, you know my serious side. Now you can hear it. I'm getting ready to walk out. Say, man, I ain't going to sit in here and watch you make a joke out of this kind of thing. And then this water fell on me from the roof. This is a true story. I got witnesses. So when you say what kind of questions, I would ask the journalist, okay, that's a play. That's something that I will – it's the first time I'm actually saying it. I would ask, I would tell people the first time I'm telling you or anyone pretty much how many times I have been stopped by the police. I've been close with guns pulled out on me numerous occasions. So when I played a cop on television, I didn't do any research. I didn't talk to any cops. When I played, say, well, what kind of research did you do when you played the cop on? I said, I didn't do any research on it. I played what I felt this political particular Captain Bonfather. He had this political kind of side to him, slick political side, you know. So I had that, but I never talked about how many times as a youngster I was arrested and pulled over when I would go to auditions. It got heavy. I had cops pull guns out on me 3 times, and it got close. I could have been like any. So when this thing happens to these young fellas out here and it continues to happen, I said, okay, Melvin Van Peebles did a movie about it, and it was called Sweetback. Everybody thinks Sweetback is about an X-rated sex thing. It's about him intervening into. So that's why I say story is first.
Mm-hmm.
Sweetback is about a man who intervenes into a cop brutalizing a young person.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Sweetback is about.
Mm-hmm.
But that, you know, as you say, you know, these, I would say life experience and the stories when we share more of our life experiences, and they don't always have to be, you know, depressing. They can be very, I have some joyous life experiences like having 2 daughters and being there and delivering.
Yeah.
Cutting the umbilical cord. Where when I grew up, the man would stand outside and smoke a cigar and pace. No, I was in there. And when you see, you know, and you're cutting the umbilical cord and you're right there to see these children grow. And now one of them is birthday today. So it's a special day. You called me on the, my daughter Jaisa's birthday today. And she was working with Paul Tazewell on the Michael Jackson Broadway show. So, see, I do theater. Yeah, my daughter Jais was on the costume team with a very talented young man named Paul Tazewell, costume designer, excellent costume designer. And she's working with him. My other daughter writes for a show on Paramount called Evil from the producers of The Good Wife, the producers of that show. My eldest daughter writes for that. So the life experiences don't always have to be something, you know, depressing or, you know, sad. They can be very joyous. That's why I say balance.
Well, you know, You know, I'm very glad that we got to that point, and so that we included a bit of your family in this conversation, that we have these last about 2 or 3 minutes left, because it okay. showed what you wanted to talk about. What, you know, so many times people ask questions like I do about really get to the point where the person being asked the question doesn't get a chance to say, this is what I want to talk about for a minute, you know? So I was just curious.
That's right.
What would be, you know, what would be close to your heart? And of course, it was a part of it, of course, was what we do for a living. It's always, you know, the arts. And the other is family, because you are by all means a wonderful family man. So with that said, I'm going to have to start to close this segment of our conversation down and start letting people know that we're going to get ready to do the visual part of it, the video part of it in the afterthoughts in a few minutes. I can't thank you.
Beautiful.
That I know very well, and building the arc of your life. So I know that when people see you now, they have a little bit more complete story about who you are and how you got to that point. We will have to have you back again to finish a lot of it, because we didn't get to a lot of it. But that's a good thing. I'm going to a run of
that's
that, great. If I can catch you. Now, I'll just let the audience know. He's not that
easy
all the time now. But, you know, I catch him.
For certain people, that's what I'm trying to say. No, that's what I'm trying to tell you. I'm open with certain people. That's what I'm trying to do. And it works. It works that way. We have that opportunity with the tools we have now, with the tools we have.
With that, I'm going to say to my audience, thank you very much. So we will be back on the air on September the 14th with two young, wonderful performers who will talk about their experiences and challenges in the business, Erica Abbott and Billy Erhocker and Ilaka, and we will enjoy that conversation as we have enjoyed this. So thank you so much. Clayton, I will see you on the video in a few minutes. I'm going to end this, and thank you everyone for tuning in to Lenny Godfrey, Straight No Chaser.
Thank you, Lenny.
Bye-bye.
And thank all your
you
listeners.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago. Never know how much I love you. You never know how much I care. When you put your arms around me, I get a feeling that's too hard to bear. You give me fever. When you kiss me, fever, when you hold me tight, fever, in the morning, fever all through the night. Listen to me, baby, hear every word I say. No one can love you the way I do, 'cause they don't know.